Blog Talk Radio.
Here, it's September 25th, 2013, and I've got a couple of things to talk about today. First of all, I want to say something very obvious. Nobody likes a limp handshake, and nobody likes an introvert, because an introvert is like a limp handshake. They're cold, they're quiet, and they're unsociable, and in the past, they knew their place. If you were an introvert, you knew that your fate was to be a loner, a loner. But now, with the internet, introverts have gone on the rampage. They know that nobody likes them. So every week, they issue declarations trying to claim that we don't know it, but they're really very nice people. And you know why they can do that? Because social media lets them talk to people without really having to be with people. The internet is their gift from heaven. You just load up a bunch of postings on Buffer or Hootsuite or something like that, and it looks like you're chatting all day long. But the internet is not reality. And once you meet that person, you might be surprised that you've got a cold fish on your hands. Yeah, so let me switch gears for a minute. You know, the introvert, I just said, seems normal online and weird in real life. But some people seem normal in real life and weird online. The other day, a recruiter told me that he sent two candidates out to the client company, and the team really liked one guy, but the hiring manager wasn't so sure about him. So the recruiter said, "Why not? What's wrong?" And the client said, "Have you seen his Twitter page?" And the recruiter said, "No." So the client said, "Go take a look." And it was full of stuff that I can't really say on a family show, but I will give you some of the milder examples. Here's one. Did you ever notice that hemorrhoids don't taste so good? If your religion is worth killing for, why don't you start with yourself? I like that Bible story because it's got rape, incest, murder, and a pillar of salt. Finally, I'll give you one more. I'm watching it now, but I don't think my employer will care that I'm eating bandwidth. My first reaction when I heard that story is, don't hire this guy. But then I asked myself, I said, would I rather work with an introvert who seems normal online or with this guy who seems great in real life? And if you want to know the answer to that question, how I answered it and other people answer it, listen to Jerry. Jerry, what show is this?
The Recruiting Animal Show. Thank you, Animal. Thank you for letting me be a part of this groundbreaking show. Thank you.
It is groundbreaking. We got a great guest today, but before we go to the guest, I just want to remind you of something. Jerry, last week
Reminding me, or you as in everybody?
No, you specifically, and me. Everybody as well. Last week
Jerry
on the
Albright,
show,
free range recruiter. Gotcha.
I told you that I got an email from a company in France, and they seemed to be looking for a headhunter, but the letter was in broken English. So I asked, do you think it's real or do you think it's spam? And you told me it was garbage. Yesterday, the guy called me from France and asked why he hadn't heard back from me.
No, dude. Everybody else said it was garbage. I said it was probably real.
No. That's not what happened.
I'd like to hear the tape. You
okay.
Dig the tape
David
up
Perry.
On that.
Let's go to the guest. David Perry,
Well, yeah, but I think half of my eardrum is gone.
I never know how loud I'm going to be. I mean, I'm struggling with this sound system. Sorry. I'm sorry. Check
no,
back.
No,
okay?
You're not. You did it on purpose, but that's okay. I'm here.
Okay. I'm going to introduce you. David Perry is a super recruiter. He lives in Ottawa. That's the capital of Canada. And he's a third-party recruiter. He wrote Guerrilla Marketing for Job Hunters, a fantastic book. A fantastic book. You can find all the information about that one at GM4JH.com, right? GM is Guerrilla Marketing for Job Hunters, JH.com. Your company is called Perry Martell. That's PerryMartell.com. Is there anything important that we have to say before we get going?
Nope. Thank you for the intro.
Did you bring a song? Did you bring a song? Is there a song you'd like to sing?
No.
Why not? Didn't you ever listen to the show before? Anyway, let's just move on. I'm sick of fighting
with people.
I like people.
That's why I'm not going to sing.
No, that's not true. That's because you're a chicken like everybody else. I don't want to know why.
That's true.
Okay, look, I'll get right into it. Last week you called in for the after show. Not the regular show, the after show.
The after show.
Yeah, the after show. So, yeah, you told Jerry that dialing for dollar days are gone, you know? What does that mean? What can that possibly mean?
Well, those are the recruiters that that's the want to buy a chicken.
Yeah,
when
I
started out in the recruiting business 25 years ago, it was pick a candidate and, you know, just present the heck out of them until you found an opening for them. Want to buy a chicken. Eventually someone's going to say, yeah, I want to buy a chicken. I call it dialing for dollars after years.
What's wrong with that? What's wrong with that? Jerry didn't trouble to ask you what you meant, but I am going to. What's wrong with that?
I think you need, what's wrong with that is in the old days, you know, that was novel. Now everybody does it. So you got to be more strategic. You got to make sure you're talking to the right person about the right potential candidate. Otherwise, you don't get an opportunity to call back. And the dialing for dollars now that people do, with recruiters, I mean, you know, they want to actually talk to a real person on the phone. And voicemail has made that, you know, all but unusual. So you have to adjust your tactics. If you're going to do dialing for dollars, you really have to be able to leave a compelling voicemail message. That's a major change.
Yeah, you know what? You know, you've said nothing, okay? Yeah, you said nothing. That you didn't address the question. You've moved on to another issue about leaving voicemail.
Dude,
I
hate to jump in so early in the show, but you're wrong, Animal. What David said there was absolutely right. The want to buy
nothing.
A chicken stuff is done. You can't expect to have 100 names that you're going to call every day with your hot candidate, your hot sheet people. It just,
you know,
that approach doesn't even work.
He said that's what he said, but that's not what he meant. Because that's then he said, yeah, but you got to do the same thing and just leave voicemails, good voicemails.
No. I said,
real person.
Don't tell me what I said.
Right.
I know
so
what
if you
said,
misunderstood
you
it, let me re-explain it.
You'd think that he understands Canadian, David, but I guess not.
I just want to make sure everybody knows that there are normal Canadians up here. I count myself among that small elite group.
Mm. We'll see how normal you are once we tell stories about what you've done. Okay, go on. Jerry defended you. You said you want to defend yourself. Go ahead.
Now, if you want to continue to operate like that, you're operating in a much smaller pool, and you're going to be going after much smaller fees. So will it still work? Yeah, but not as well as it would. Because you're not trying to develop a relationship. You want to sell
a
chicken.
Relationship?
Do you want to
What's
sell a
relationship?
Chicken? What's that?
What's a relationship? You got a candidate, they need the guy. That's it. That's the limit
of
your relationship.
That's not the only thing recruiters do. If recruiters are strategic, and you know they can be strategic, Animal. If recruiters are strategic, you know, they can work with senior executives to help them actually steer the boat, so to speak, and make sure that they're getting the right talent at the right time. And that's proactive, not reactive. And one of
but
them,
most
out,
recruiters aren't qualified, though, to actually be engaged in any kind of larger strategy. They're mostly there to sell a chicken.
Well,
aren't they?
Yeah, maybe a lot of recruiters, but there's a lot of recruiters that... aren't
you know,
in that business,
okay.
Or at least
let's move on to the next
anymore.
One. Okay, I could hammer you to death on that because I know what you're saying is very peculiar. It applies to maybe people like you and nobody else. But you also told Jerry, who didn't challenge you at all, you said,
I don't challenge people, dude. I'm a listener. Don't you get
yeah,
it?
Yeah, good. Yeah. You said, I'm not a salesman. You said, I'm not a salesman. Now, I read an article just last week that recruiters are salespeople who open the minds of candidates to new possibilities. You say you're not a salesman. What do you mean by that?
You know, I actually like that expression. You're going to have to write it down and send it to me. I don't sell in the typical sense of the term sell and hard close. That is essentially what I do. I reallocate talent by showing people what's possible. And that's not selling. That's just helping people discover
what's possible.
What does that mean?
Can you fill in the blank for me?
I'm having
trouble. You know what? I don't understand Canadian if he's talking Canadian. I don't know what he means. I don't know anything he says has a meaning. Come on. What does that mean?
You can't sell anybody anything, period. You have to allow people to buy what they want. The challenge is you have to be able to educate people as to what's possible so that what they want is what you have, potentially. I mean, we don't sell opportunities. We go and have business discussions with clients. We have business discussions with candidates. And if the fit is right, not just the experience but the chemistry is right, we're not selling. We're allowing them to buy into the opportunity.
Okay. Who's here who wants to talk? Anybody here think that they're not a salesperson? A recruiter is not a salesperson?
We're definitely salespeople.
Go ahead. You teach them, Kathy. Go ahead. You got
yeah,
the floor.
Yeah, we
sell Kathy
people.
Corner.
We sell people. I mean, that's one of the most intangible things that someone can sell.
Yeah, but we're not selling people, Kathy, so much as you're solving a problem that a client had. We talked about this last week. We don't really sell. What we do is we're solution providers. We solve problems for clients. We just
happen to
do it by bringing the right people in. Yeah.
And you have to sell that
you're solving
person.
A problem.
Obviously, what David here is describing is really more the process and the appearance of what you're doing. I don't feel like I'm just a salesy, smarmy sales guy either.
No, you're not.
Jerry insists the recruiting is sales. And
of course it is. And the best salespeople never really sell a thing. Dummy.
Okay, two guys are playing with
so
words.
I'll take a bullet on that.
How can you pin anybody down like that? Go ahead, Dave.
No, I said I'll take a bullet on that. If that's your interpretation,
okay,
because I haven't agreed with it. If that's your interpretation and that's
question.
The way you want
next
to frame
question.
It, that's fine.
Okay, next question. Yep. Are cover letters toilet paper?
Cover letters to who? Candidates or clients or candidates sending them to recruiters or recruiters using it to get business?
No,
I don't think it's toilet paper.
Okay,
I don't think
do you read cover letters?
I read cover letters? Yeah. I read
you
cover
do?
Letters all the time. But I don't
letter?
Get that many.
Hey, listen to what's...
Welcome to Verizon Wireless.
Oh, nice.
The wireless customer
what
you called is not
that?
Available at this time. Please try your call again
is
later.
That?
Announcement from 4182-4. Welcome
weird.
To Verizon Wireless. The wireless customer you called is not available at this time. Please try your call again later. Announcement
4182-4.
It's
you have a habitual offender amongst your crowd. You know it.
Okay.
Did you just
well,
shut the whole
show?
Well, it
seems to have gone away. It went away.
Let me add a little bit of background there for David. David, a lot of recruiters don't quite have the time to open up a cover letter. They don't want to take a look and see what the person has to say in a few paragraphs outside of their canned resume. They're too busy. They don't have time to read a cover letter. They trash them. Never even open them. Hit the delete button, I believe is what Animal does.
You know, you're such a cheater, Jerry, that you said the canned resume. What's a cover letter? But 99% of them are canned garbage. And if you lived in Russia,
gosh.
You'd be using it in the outhouse.
But that's not a cover letter, boys. That's That, you know, that's called Reza spam.
Okay.
And we all get
resume spam. You guys
spam,
play with
spam.
The words as much as you want. You're losing my audience for me. Okay, here's another one, Dave. How many times will you call someone till you get in touch with them?
The record is 83.
Okay, 83 times.
So one person?
Yeah.
One person? You tried 83 times?
83 times. I left, you know, after the third attempt, you know, I figured it would only go a couple more. After number 10, I figured I was going to get it in a dozen. After that, I started writing down the voicemail messages I was leaving because I was bound and determined that I was eventually going to get this guy, and I did. I was eventually going to get this guy, and I'm leaving a different voicemail message every single time. I was working for a software company. I was working for a software company in Ottawa. I was hiring the president. We were in the middle of counteroffers with a guy that we had made an offer to. And this one particular guy I really wanted, or at least I wanted to bring him to the table. So we're in the middle of the counteroffers. I finally got him. The way I got him, this goes back a long time. The way I got him was I found out, this was the president of Motorola Data. I found out that he was going to Germany, and when he was landing, and I phoned the airport, and I talked to all of the car rental companies until I found the one, I pretended to be him, frankly, until I found the one that had my car rental, made sure it had a phone in it, asked for the number because I had to leave it for my secretary, and then I waited until he touched down, and about an hour after I knew he'd touched down, I called him up, and I said, Glenn, David Perry, you got a minute? And of course, he's on the Autobahn driving, right? So, you know, I pitched him, and We ended up bringing him to Ottawa and making him an offer, and he moved to Ottawa. So 83 is the record. But it started out as a game.
Okay. What about on average? Because we have people saying quite regularly, don't call someone more than three times. You're just making them angry.
Well, you know what? I would disagree with that because I did one last – no, 2 years ago. I called a guy. I probably called him seven times. And different times of the day, left different voicemail messages. And, you know, the one that I use frequently that usually gets attention, but I don't do it until it's about number five or six, is I phoned and left a message, and I said, George, David Perry, listen, it's easier to get an audience with the Pope. Call me. And he did. And, you know, and if you leave a voicemail message like that, oftentimes you'll get a call back. But if the candidate's worth it, you just got to do it. But don't just call. I mean, you know, send them a postcard. Send them a card in the mail. What kinds of ways to get hold of somebody? You're just trying to grab their attention, right? You need to get in front of that individual, grab their attention so that you can reveal to them an opportunity that they're going to miss out on unless they pay attention. And the problem is most candidates are... Most candidates are used to getting, you know, three, four, five calls. And it's from a recruiter, and the recruiter never follows through, or they give them the information, and they never call back. So, you know, you've got a jaded audience out there, and it's been a jaded audience for a long, long time. And it's getting worse because, you know, during this last recession, we make our money typically moving people when there's a scarcity, and there's been it's been plentiful. And very few recruiters take the time to do what you guys are doing, for example. Very few recruiters take the time to actually stop and help somebody out, no matter how big or small the help is. Most people just keep walking by. That's the reason, you know, the series of books got written. I wrote the books
No, you told us a good thing. Now you're going off on a tangent. That's why I have to
finish
tie in. No. Look. I want to know, for the average person, my experience is if I call three times and I don't hear back, that means they're not interested. If I call five times, they will call back, and they'll tell me they're not interested. Are you saying that I should always call till they call me back and that there is a chance, even if you're calling them a high number of times, that you might actually recruit that person?
Yes. Because if the person was worth calling in the first place, they're worth following through on.
Okay.
Period.
You know, Lisa Rakusek, I don't think you know her, but she's my Twitter buddy. And on her blog, she told a story about just contacting a passive candidate, someone who wasn't looking for a job, called him at work, to tell him about a job. He got really angry. She bugged him at work. He didn't want to be bothered. Does that ever happen to you?
Yeah.
What do you do?
I apologize. Ask for their home phone number and their cell number. So the next time we have a conversation, because, you know, I got something to, if he's not interested in this, I've been around so long that eventually I'm going to find something that they're interested in. So, you know, give me your cell and or your home phone number. I'll put that in, and I won't call you at work anymore.
Okay. Last week you told Jerry that you have to be genuine, which for you meant being very blunt with people. You said, I think you said, you cold-called somebody and pitched her, and she got very angry. So you called her back the next day, and she said, didn't you hear what I said yesterday? And you said, yeah, but I thought you were just being bitchy. I didn't know you were serious. Is that a true story?
That's a true story, and I was the president of a major tech company in Toronto. This goes back 10 years, and it was female.
It was female. I did say she was female. It was female. Yeah, okay, so would you get someone who's cranky on the line? Will you call back the next day or the next week or the next month?
Yeah. I mean, a lot of the reasons people get pissed off when recruiters call is because recruiters call me, for God's sake. And I'll tell you about my recruiting call in a second if you're interested. But, you know, they always say, is this a good time? No. The automatic reaction is no, it's not a good time. So next time, if you don't ask that question. Ask them if this is a bad time, because they're going to do the exact opposite. But no, what's up? So try that next
okay.
time.
Yeah, but what
I like
saying
it.
Is,
if someone's
okay, if someone's rude to you and cranky because you're bugging them, and they say, you know, don't call me again, you'll call them again. Is that right?
Not necessarily. I'll ask them why they don't want me to call them again. And they'll tell me, you know, because I've had a bad experience or because, you know, I own the company or because whatever. And if it makes sense, I go, okay, fine. You know, that's a good reason. I probably shouldn't call you back. And I'll go right in to get in a referral. But most times, just people just say, oh, well, you know, I'm having a bad day, man. Or, you know, or I started a new job or I've only been here for 6 months or whatever the case happens to be. What you need to do, what you need to understand when you're calling somebody is their situation. But there's no way to know because you're on one end of the phone and they're on the other. They can't see you. So you don't know whether they've had a great day, bad day, somebody just died, what? So,
okay, so now,
you know,
so you gave an example that happened to me more before the with so much information online. But when you call someone and it turns out he's the or she's the boss, what do you say to them?
Well, that hasn't happened a long, long, long time.
Yeah, that's what I mean. With the internet, it doesn't really happen.
Well, it's happened to me before in the past, and I've simply said, well, what's your turnover rate like? And they'll say, you know, minimal. And I'll say, what do you attribute that to? And I'll have a conversation.
You don't call
because
that sales.
A company,
right? You don't
a company
call that
that's
sales.
It's investigative work, right? A company that's got low turnover is doing something right, and I want to understand what that is. It's because they've probably got friends. And I want to be, you know, it's a business. I want to spread the wealth. I got a lot of wealth to spread. I'm a big boy. So,
okay,
you know,
you
if
said
this is a well-run company, I want to do business with them or I want to do business with their friends.
How do you do business with their friends?
You ask them.
Okay,
it's simple.
Ask them?
I mean, this is a referral business. Well,
how do you get referrals? That's what I'm asking.
Animal, you ask. Who else runs a company like yours that's you know, really well together? I'm thinking it off the top of my head. But, you know, who runs a company as well as you do? And they'll tell you because you're having a conversation. You're not pitching something. You're having a conversation. And then you move into the typical thing after 15 minutes. You know, would you mind if I called them? No, I wouldn't mind at all. Can I use your name? Yeah, go ahead. Well, in fact, would you like to call them instead to let them know that, you know, I'm going to give them a call? Yeah, that's fine. When are you going to do
that? You're kidding. People do that for you?
No, I'm not kidding. This is, of course this works. This is what happens when you're dealing with senior executives and you're dealing with them not in the want to buy a chicken mode.
Can I ask one question? It's really bugging me.
Go ahead, Kathy. Go ahead.
The person that you called 83 times, did they think you were, like, stalking them?
No. The only person
that
ever accused
me. What was their reaction to 83 calls?
Well, I don't think he actually kept track because he thought it was, you know, like 50. And he said, I'm paraphrasing, but he said, you know, something like, "Damn, you're persistent. What the hell do you want?" I mean, that's what he said, driving down the Autobahn. I mean, and what do you react to? He said, "Listen, I got this opportunity," and I went straight into explaining why he fit in this role and why I at least needed him to know so that he could say yes or no. And what I needed him to say yes or no to was having a coffee with my client. And he eventually, in the phone call, agreed to have a coffee with my client. And I called my client. Actually, I went over to the client's office, and I said, "Great news. You're going to meet Glenn tomorrow, blah, blah, blah." He says, "Okay, why are you here? It's going to be some bad news." I said, "No, it's not really any bad news, but Marilyn will be in about 15 minutes with your tickets because you're meeting him in Vancouver, and you've got to go now." So, you know, he didn't actually come to Ottawa for the first meeting. We had to fly the CEO out to Vancouver.
Okay. Jeff Dickey Chasins, the job board doctor, says Animal sounds dumbfounded by David Perry's techniques. They really do that? Yeah. Why? I am dumbfounded. Why would a stranger that he calls up call his or her friends on his behalf? Why would they, Dave? Now, I'll bet you a job board doctor can't answer that right now. And he should.
It's an easier question to Animal. It's an easier question to answer or ask is, why wouldn't they? You just haven't experienced it. Perhaps you just haven't experienced it. But if you're having a business conversation with someone who respects you after 10 minutes of having a business conversation, yeah, they'll make the call if you ask them to. Sometimes they won't.
I mean,
but I've never had anybody swear at me
when you had a great meal at a great restaurant.
What?
Going into a great club. It's the same thing. People want to be known by the company they keep. So the referrals you give, if someone impresses the hell out of you on the phone,
okay,
you want to make sure everybody
Jimmy,
else knows.
This is the famous Jimmy
good.
Durbin, okay?
Very
you know what? How do you sound so in 10 minutes, I guess I just don't sound that impressive that in 5 minutes or 10 minutes, someone is going to want to recommend me to their network. But you, Jimmy, and Dave, what is it that you do, Dave, that impresses these people so much that they'll go to bat for you, a virtual stranger?
It's not so much what I do, it's the knowledge. I'm trying to answer the question. It's not so much what I do as opposed to the knowledge that I bring, because I'm usually up to date in terms of what's happening in their industry and what's going on. So I ask them questions like, you know, what do you see happening over the next 2 quarters? Where's the growth coming from? Where are the new markets? You know, there's been this kind of introduction of technology by this company. How's it impacting your business? How's it impacting the industry? And when you have those kinds of, you know, discussions, or you ask those kinds of questions that are thoughtful, you know, people stop and people judge you by the depth of the questions you ask. We judge candidates that way, right?
Just like the job doctor
great question,
is judging
Animal.
Me now, right? Okay. Okay, now look,
no, great question.
I read an article that "Don't Tell Your Dummy Client That He's a Dummy." That's the title I gave it, right? So if you have a client and you tell him or her that the salary they want to pay is too low, and he says, "Money isn't everything, I want someone who wants to work here, you know, is excited by the opportunity," you kind of groan, and he doesn't want to deal with you anymore. So they say, don't be straightforward with your client. You know, be indirect. Ask questions that bring him face-to-face with his own stupidity. You'll say, have any candidates you've interviewed brought up the issue of money so far, or have you ever needed to make adjustments to your compensation plan to attract the best candidates? Which route do you prefer, this indirect route, or just telling them you are wrong? I've been calling tons of people, and none of them match your picture of reality.
Depends on the situation, depends on the client, depends on whether you know them or not, and whether you feel they're going to best be served by speaking that bluntly with them. Most people I would go the indirect route. If I know the client, or I know someone else that knows a client, it's a referral, you know, and they ask me what I think, tell them what they think. And I always preface it by saying, you know, you should probably, you know, put your hands over your ears because what I'm about to tell you, you don't want to hear. So they're braced for it anyway. And ease into it that way. So I'd like to see that article because I think I probably agree.
Okay, it's posted on FacebookRecruiter.com. Okay, but the thing is, you're a guy who just told somebody you didn't know that she was a bitch. I mean, like, I'm having trouble putting it all together. On the one minute, you're genuine, and then you're very tactful. I like to be genuine.
But
let me ask you
genuine.
Okay, let me ask
she
you a different
a
question. Now, okay, you weren't very indirect about that, okay? Now,
yeah,
look.
But there I needed her attention. I needed her attention, and I got it. And the only way I got it was showing her that, you know, I'm equal to the task, honey. I probably, actually, at the time, I did make more money than her, so I don't need this shit.
Okay. I was talking to a hiring manager, and, you know, I was interviewing the guy, essentially finding out what he was looking for, and he was talking so slow, and he wasn't asking what I considered to be the real questions that were, you know, relevant issues. So I just asked myself, should I interrupt this guy? And I did. I kept interrupting him and taking him where I wanted him to go. Would you interrupt somebody, or would you just be polite? You would, yes? Yeah?
Yeah, but I don't do my – I also don't take my directions over the phone. I sit with clients no matter where they are. If it's in a different country, I'll fly out there. I'm not kidding. You know that.
No, I don't.
If I'm trying
know
to sell
that.
A chicken, it's a different story.
I do the same thing. I learned that from Dave. They sign a retainer. I'm on a plane to go see him.
Yeah. I mean, I went down to LA a couple years ago with the guy that hired us to do a job. And I walked into the boardroom, and there's three board members there, and I got a guy that I'm training at the same time. And it was all very pleasant. And I said, do you mind if I ask you a couple of questions before we start? And he goes, I'll be asking the questions here in one of those voices. And he said, you work for me now, boy. And if he hadn't put the boy in, I think I probably would have been okay. But, you know, I blew a mental gasket inside. I opened my coat, I pulled out his retainer check, and I held it in front of his face and said, you see this? He goes, yeah. I said, fine. You'll notice I haven't cashed it. I said, I'm going to ask you three questions. You get the three questions right, then I'm going to take the search. You get any of the three questions wrong, we go for lunch. I tear up the check. I said, we go for lunch, and there's no harm, no foul.
Ballsy.
And then he finally said, what's the question? So, and I had to be, because this guy had hired two of the biggest search firms in the world over the previous 2 years to hire a COO. Both firms collected $110,000 each, and neither one of them delivered a hireable candidate. And I needed to know, before I cashed his check, if this guy was a monster or if he was getting stooped. And it wasn't hard to figure out.
Okay, no, it wasn't, from just what he said. So you worked the search and placed the person?
Yeah.
Really? Okay. Okay, you know how to put people in their place. Did Jim, were you saying something there? Was someone else wanting to say something? No?
I was just curious if David was doing any adopting.
What's that?
Adopting?
Yeah.
What's adopting?
You know, when you get a new son.
No, I haven't done any adopting. Oh, sorry. I was checking my mental bank for the term in recruiting, and I'm going, I'm coming up blank.
Yeah, I came up
sorry.
Blank.
I think my favorite part is that Jerry's sitting there being a head nodder for the first time in the history of the Animal Show.
I'm all about listening to someone who makes more money than I do, and it's kind of rare on the show.
Okay,
well,
Dave.
I'll take that as a backhanded compliment. Thank you.
Dave, what about the question, which was a real thing? The candidate, there were two candidates. One of them, the team liked the guy, really liked the guy. The hiring manager wasn't keen on him because he actually had this Twitter page that I saw that had, you know, these bizarre things on it, Alex Trebek and then blank, blank, blank. I can't tell you the rest, okay? So what about that? Would you recommend that the client hire the guy who is normal in everyday life but weird online?
I would not recommend they hire him until or even if after, they do a much more in-depth interview process and do a real deep dive on their references. I know that we're not supposed to keep things that people do privately as part of, the recruiting criteria, and it's not really, but honest to God, if, you know, someone is that, and from the information you've given me, they're not a little off, they're a lot off to the right-hand side. When you bring in a candidate, whether you're an internal recruiter or you're an external recruiter putting somebody in, you know, you got a moral obligation to make sure that you've found out everything you possibly can about this individual, because you're putting him in an organization, and, you know, damage can be done. I mean, and there's a lot of history of it. There's a thing on my website. I got an ebook on my website called Don't Hire a Liar. You know, and this is part of the process. It's the last step, but I've killed deals. I've killed deals, that, you know, at the last minute because we found out that the CFO, that the president liked, and I'm going, oh, I'm not quite sure. And he's saying, what the hell difference does it make to you? You're getting paid every way. Or anyway, I said, no, I'm not sure. And we found out, because we put a private eye on him, that, you know, he was spending a couple hours a week at the casino, which is his business. However, his losses were far more than he was making, if you know what I mean.
Okay. So in this case, though, I just want to clarify, I won't drag it out. The guy's very good at what he does, okay? Very good. The team, he's had a thorough interview process. The team he's going to be working with, they really like the guy. So he can do the job. They find him sociable. He just likes, I don't know, being weird on his keyboard at nighttime. So you say it's an issue, or it could be an issue, right?
It could be an issue. I would raise it to the team. I'd let them know. And, you know, they're adults. They're going to make their own decision. In this guy's defense, you know, and I may be offended many that are listening, I find techies a little weird to start with. But that's why I like them.
Because
they see the world in a different light.
It is a techie. You're right. It is a techie. The programmer. Yeah. Okay. So you told us your cold call. Okay, you know what? Hidden jobs. There's a guy named Will Thompson who claims there is no such thing as hidden jobs. All companies are obligated, I think he said in his article, to post their positions. You said, I heard you on a webinar with Jason Alba, and you said there's tons of hidden jobs. You said there's tons of hidden jobs. Do you want to explain it, how you know that?
Yeah, I actually went and read his article. So two things. Can anybody, Jerry's in the States, and Jim's down there as well, how many jobs were open, technically open, in July of 2013? Come on, guys, take a guess. I know the answer.
We don't know.
I'm
tell us.
Thousands.
Come on, guys.
8 million.
8 million.
Somebody's right. It's 8.1 million. So that's
Bam.
The real number. That's the Labor Board of Statistics number. So that's some bullshit. Now, here's the more interesting thing, guys. How many of those jobs got filled? I'll tell you, 4.4 million. Why does that matter? Because the number of jobs that went unfilled in the United States of America last month, while 101 working age Americans don't have a job and 48 million people are on food stamps, 3.7 million jobs went unfilled. And those aren't really hidden jobs because they're in plain sight because the government is counting them. So hidden jobs, the way he was defining it, you know, is incorrect. And the term hidden jobs, the way he was defining it, is that there's this grand conspiracy. There's no grand conspiracy to keep jobs from people. I understand there have been some career counselors over the years that say, oh, we know where the hidden jobs are because, you know, we know the clients and blah, blah, blah. Those aren't hidden jobs. That's just a scam. A hidden job is a job that isn't known yet because it's a problem in the mind of an employer that hasn't been fixed. That's what a hidden job is. There's work to be done there, but for whatever reason. You know, the employer doesn't have the money
I thought the answer was much simpler, that there's jobs that people don't want to post because then they have to be subject to all kinds of regulations, so they just fill them by word of mouth. They never make it to the public view, but there's a grapevine that does tap into those positions. That's what I thought your answer was going to be.
So you're absolutely right. So we're going down two different trees here, but you're absolutely right. But the bigger issue is, did anybody see 8.1 million ads? And the answer is no. And this is the part that job hunters don't get. They're used to looking on job boards or looking in the newspaper, and we don't do it that way anymore. You know, whether you're an internal recruiter or a third-party recruiter, we don't advertise. Why? Because every time we do, we don't get 50 or 500 resumes. We get 5,000 or 20,000, and none of us are capable of sorting through that bullshit, and we have to because that's the law. We have to read it.
Okay, gotta move on. Enough time for Will Thompson. He didn't call in. If he really wanted to talk about it, he could have done so. I'm not interested. Okay, look, when you're talking to a recruiter, when a job hunter talks to a recruiter, and they'll ask you, where have you been already? Where have you interviewed? You shouldn't tell them. Is that right? Because they're going to try to get competition. They'll try to put their own people in that company against you. Is that right?
So, yes, and let me answer that. As a recruiter, you're asking the wrong question if you need that information. What you should be asking is, where have you applied for a job, had an interview already, and not gotten an offer, and why? So you get those lists of companies if you're going to go and play Wanna Buy a Chicken. Make sense?
Okay, but lots of recruiters, they actually want to get the places where it's not closed yet, when you're under consideration.
I know how it works.
No, they don't. So, and that's unethical. If the guy you're talking to is still being considered at a place, no way do you call in there.
Yes,
at least that's my
policy.
Very uncool.
Dave, what do you say if a recruiter asks you? What do you say if you're a job hunter and you get asked that question by a recruiter?
Why do you want to know?
So I don't call them on your behalf.
Stupid answer.
But, Have we made an agreement that you are solely representing me? Because I don't remember making that agreement in the last 5 minutes. So if you're telling me that I can only work with you as a recruiter...
No, that's not the issue. You just might... I'm going to market you to your industry, and I don't want to call the places you've been already.
Well, then call me first before you send my resume over there.
Then... where's the list of the companies that you want to represent me to? Let's sit down and work on this together. I mean, when you're representing a candidate,
you're not answering the question. You know what? I'm tired of spending the whole show arguing, just trying to get an answer to the question. If you don't want to answer the question, I'm not going to fight with you, okay?
You mean, is that your new policy, or is that just this show?
Just this show.
I was going to say, it sounds like you're canceling your show.
I'm sorry, Mike. I thought I was answering the question.
That was awesome.
Dave Perry, I have another question. Unless somebody else has one, I'd love to have someone else ask Dave a question. Does anybody else have a question? Kathy's asked a few.
Is there anybody else here besides the four of us?
Yeah, there's lots of people here. They all want to hear Dave Perry.
Millions.
And there's people on Twitter as well.
I've got a question. Okay. So David, do you work mostly at the... C level, then you're not placing regular, you know, like an accountant or a software developer guy. I mean, you're pretty
now. Yes, now I'm simply the executive suite.
Yeah,
and
see, that'd be nice.
I went that way 5 years ago.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that'd be a good deal.
But I have
got
anything
another question.
Else. My first placement was my former boss.
Okay, I got a question, another different question for you. Okay, now if you're, let's say you're talking to a client. The thing is, you specialize in a niche. So you said one of your strengths is when you're talking, if you happen to run into the owner of a company or a general manager by accident, you'll just switch into discussing the industry. But let's say you've got a client in an industry you're not familiar with. Should you bug that person to give you as much information as possible, or should you pretend that you know it already? And then, so they don't think you're an idiot.
I hate this question. You ask this all the time.
So the answer is you never bullshit, because you're going to get caught. So if you haven't done your homework before you're talking to this person, you got to ask yourself the question, why do I want to be beaten so badly? about the Head and Shoulders. It's not difficult to do a little bit of research before you pick up the phone. And this is the same problem with job hunters. I said on Jason's show, most job hunters are ignorant and lazy, you know, and you're describing a situation where a recruiter is ignorant and lazy.
You know what? I know you're wrong, Dave, okay, because you want to talk to the person, the hiring manager, find out what's important to him or her. You want to find out, since you don't know, you know, what's the structure of the companies? What titles would I be looking for that are interesting to you? I mean, those are things, information you can get from the person and actually do a great search. I know, because I've done it myself. But you have to get that information. Some people are going to say, don't you know my industry? You know, arrogant people like the one you went to California and met. But a normal person, I think, is going to spend some time with you and answer all your questions.
When you ask a manager what are some titles, that's the kind of response they're going to. What titles should I look for? That is a ridiculous question. And if I were a hiring manager, I would say, are you serious?
Okay, Jeff. I mean, Jer, you're wrong. You're obviously wrong. You're just totally wrong. You can't do a decent search unless you know all that stuff. And you know what?
That is a stupid question.
Okay,
so picture David. He's looking for a CIO, and he's going to ask the president, what are some of the titles that are kind of like that?
Jerry, there are a lot of jobs where the titles are different within the different companies.
Kathy is so right, and not only that, you have to know what level. I mean, there's going to be people who are not CIOs already. They're project managers or whatever. You have to know if they're willing to take people at that level and bring them up.
I think about it, I rarely even am talking about what the title of the job is anyway. I want to know what are they doing? What's the job?
I'm going to get Jim Durbin to back me up like he backs up. I'm going to get Jim Durbin to back me up like he backs up Mike Raymer and David Perry, because Jim Durbin told us about great searches he's done when he didn't know anything about the job.
Yeah, if you're doing motor design engineers or CEOs, you might not ask the title, but a lot of the words mean so many different things. That how would you not ask the title? Now, I wouldn't say what titles, you say, now these are the types of titles that I've worked with. Is that similar? Or this is the actual job itself? Or what do you want to call this person? But that's, you don't really ask them, you kind of tell them, because a lot of times they don't know. They've been inside a company a long time. They may think that, well, why wouldn't you call it a chief design engineer instead of an innovation officer or a business?
Okay, saying they don't know. I say they do. Next question, I got to move ahead. Dave, are you still here?
I left an hour ago.
Okay. What about this? I read an article, only suckers look for pink squirrels. You know, the question was, do you offer to take on a client's hardest to fill jobs to prove your ability? You know, you say, I love a challenge. I'll do whatever so you can't ever do. And so you're taking on a job they haven't been able to fill in 2 years. Or you stay away from that garbage. What do you think?
Purple squirrel, pink squirrel, all the same. Absolutely.
I mean, purple squirrel,
Go for it.
Tell us a story. Tell us a story about when you did that. Can you think of one?
So I just I just finished
a
search like that. Just finished a search like that. Client who I had dealt with 5 years ago, hadn't talked to them in 5 years, had a problem with the search, asked me if I would take a look at it. I came in and I said, sure. And we talked about the role, and I turned around in 3 weeks and said, this is exactly what we're looking for, correct? And we fought constructively over what the outcomes were and what the duties and tasks were. And once that was solidified, I went to the market and came back with 56 people, and I said to the CTO and the director of HR, here's the list of 56 people that seem to have similar experience. Now, you've just had a search firm on this search for a year, and you fired them on the one-year anniversary, and you said you fired them because they told you that this guy doesn't exist, and the people that you did talk to don't want to work at your company, and or they're very happy where they are. I said, here's 56 people. How many people of these have you seen? And the CTO said, well, it's a good news, bad news. So the bad news is we've seen 4 of them. The good news is we wouldn't have hired any of those 4. And here's 52 people that you're saying are in Ottawa. It looks like they're qualified by the type of role they have in the companies that they're in, and we know nothing about them. So, you know, there's one. It was a purple squirrel.
Okay, you know what? That's kind of a purple squirrel. I had that too. It was a search. They needed someone with a PhD with a very highly specialized field of experience, and they told me there's nobody like that around. And it ended up it was a hard job, but I found six people who could do the job, and some of them were coming from a different industry. But the point is, those people are actually there. They just don't know it. What about someone who's actually hard to find? I mean, your search firm, the other search firm, they were just dummies or something. They didn't know how to do it. But what about people who are really hard to find? Jerry, what about a search for, kind of an example, Jerry and I had a chat about a year ago about a search for some kind of scientist. You know, I can't remember what it was, but it was pretty hard to find that kind of person, you know?
Flavoring scientist?
No, something else.
Sure.
Yeah, Bruce, I was talking to Bruce about it. It was called technician, but it was a scientist job. I can't remember.
So, anyway. It's not hard to find a needle in a haystack, animal. You just sit on the haystack, and believe me, the needle will find you. What's hard
what does that mean?
Is to find
what does that mean in real terms?
So let me finish. What's hard
okay.
is to find a needle in a stack of needles. And what you need to do, which I'm sure what you guys do anyway, is the more focus you bring to the specific outcomes and the tasks and the experience, the more you refine what that person looks like, the easier it becomes to find them. And most search firms don't do that. They go broad instead of narrow.
Mm-hmm.
It's a rifle shot. And people aren't used to doing rifle shooting because the odds of this guy or gal being on a job board, being available in LinkedIn, you know, slim and nil. And if they got a LinkedIn profile that probably doesn't use the keywords that this client wants to talk to or wants to hire for anyway. So, you know, you can find a needle in a stack of needles. You just got to understand that it's made out of different metal. Maybe this needle is gold in this case.
Your metaphors or allegories or conceits, whatever you want to call them, are driving
right on,
crazy.
Right on the money, David.
Yeah.
Right
so
on.
What
is that what you were going to say, Animal?
What he's saying is that a purple squirrel, there really is no such thing. There's
and
just
I hate
bad
that term anyway. That's just
there's just bad recruiters God. Who can't find them. That's essentially it. So grab any of those hard-to-fill jobs because they're not really that hard to fill. That's what I think I heard Dave say.
Yeah,
am I
and
right
you get
about
all
that
the other
thing?
Business. Yes.
Yeah.
In fact, I think he was even saying that it's easier to fill those because it's
it
such
is.
A very specific skill set. Were you just listening to him, Animal?
Now, you know, you're sucking up to Dave.
No, I'm not. I've got no reason to. The man's in Canada. I'm in the United States.
Now, Dave, you said something a minute ago. It relates to another question. Let's not talk about healthcare. Anyway, client control. You said you had a fight. You pushed back with that client about defining the job. Can you clarify that? What do you mean?
Well, there is no such thing as client control. There's no such thing as candidate control. So let me state that up front. It's part of the methodology. If we're going to, and we do, we sit down and we have a training half day for all the hiring managers. And then, and before they get to the training half day in terms of here's how you do the interview, blah, 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 you know, we all have to agree on what this person looks like. And to do that, you know, I get really granular. I have to. That's all that means.
Okay, no. Jerry
so, you know, the client
never,
says,
if
I need...
If the client tells you something and you don't think it makes sense or you need more clarification, you have to challenge that person. He says, no, never challenge the client.
No, you don't have to punch him in the face
wrong.
And tell him that he's an idiot. And that's what I say that believe you need to do. No
I,
way, man. You got to be smooth.
I know more about recruiting. I know more about the recruiting than the client does. You know, and they get that. They know more about their business. This is a partnership. You know, they're doing a brain dump to give me enough information to be dangerous and bring people to the table, and then we're going to go through the sorting process.
You know,
Dave,
gotta get them to the
when
table.
You tell me something, you really mean the opposite. Now, you just said they're giving me a brain dump. Didn't I say a few minutes ago I asked you if you should go and ask them to give you a brain dump, and everybody said, no, they're going to know you're an ignoramus. Well, that's what you just said. I need a brain dump.
No. Animal. That's after I've taken the assignment. You were talking about a situation where I was talking to a potential client on the phone who I had not met yet.
No, that's not one. Well, we're talking to different purposes. Anybody got a question? There's 5 minutes left. Anybody got a question
Everybody
I haven't asked them?
I've got a question. Does anybody know if Ted Cruz is still talking? Anybody
no,
know?
He's off now. He's on the Rush show.
Man, that was great. He's on Rush?
Yeah, he went to Rush afterwards.
Man, and he's not napping.
Nope.
That'd be
impressive.
Straight into the nap. Wow.
Dave, do you recruit on Pinterest?
No, not yet.
Twitter?
I see no reason to.
Twitter? Craigslist?
Nope.
Facebook?
Nope.
Okay. Richard Branson says most skills can be learned, but it's difficult to train people on their personality. If you can find people who are fun, friendly, caring, and love helping others, you're on to a winner. You can learn most jobs extremely quickly once you are thrown in the deep end. Within 3 months, you can usually know the ins and outs of a role. Some managers get hung up on qualifications. I only look at them after everything else. Sounds like nonsense to me. What do you think?
I think it's bullshit.
Okay,
I like
great.
It. I disagree, Dave.
Okay.
Now, in principle, Jerry, yes, any job can be learned.
No, but you're
recruiters, we are hired to bring in not just the person that can do the job, but actually has the skills to do the job.
Right, and I'm not talking about placing an accountant in a physician's role, but basically.
But you read that article, he was.
Really?
Yeah, it was
okay.
A very general comment.
Like hire a nice guy and make him your CPA?
That's right, yeah, kind of, I guess, I don't know. He's probably,
okay, well, you didn't, I can't read everything. I can barely read anything.
You don't read anything. Okay. Sally Krawchuk, Kravchuk, always impressed me as a very good-looking person. Here's what she says about interviews. She says, I look for people who make me uncomfortable, who are different from me, who hold views that are different than I do. Hiring this way may make the workplace less comfortable for the team, but that's what I want. I don't believe her. Dave? What do you think? Because that's the opposite about counterculture.
I think culture is everything, and I think that, especially because we're all moving towards creative destruction on a daily basis, I think culture is everything. I think people need to like each other. They need to trust each other, and the trust has to come before anything else.
Yeah.
So, you know, getting a bunch of people that don't like each other, which is sort of what I read into that, it's not going to work. It may work for the manager because they get to control everything, but that's a command and control environment. And that is,
you know what? We're
getting
to the great question that I didn't ask
death.
You. We got 2 minutes left, and that was the question. How do you test for culture? Do you give people personality tests, or do you just go with your gut?
Both.
Oh, you do?
Both.
You do the personality testing?
Hmm.
Both, but we only do that when we're down to the short strokes, and we only do it if we think we really have to. And I've actually used the personality testing, and my wife, who's certified in this stuff, in final interviews to rule candidates out because I had a niggly feeling about somebody, and I needed to.
You had a what?
More than a hunch.
Excuse me.
A niggling feeling.
Niggling. Didn't say anything bad.
N-I-G-G-L-I-N-G.
I have a heightened sense of awareness of those. Thanks. Sorry
yeah,
about
that's,
that.
That's Canadian, okay? If you're not aware of it, improve your vocabulary. Improve your vocabulary. It might come up to our level. Okay. Now, Dave, that I guess I'm just going to have to leave that culture question hanging. It's a great one, and I would have liked you to be as slippery as you've proved yourself to be. Answering that one, but we're going to have to leave it.
Slippery.
Any final words, Dave?
Thanks for having me on. Lots of fun. I'll come back anytime you want. If anybody.
Okay, and we'll do the culture thing then. David,
anybody
Jerry, we can't stay on. We're going to Jerry's after show, but thank you!
To hang up now?
Yeah.
Get off the line!
What?
Hey, Mom, hang up. I got it.
I know I'm missing all the jokes in this.
No, actually, the after show, Dave, is where we kind of evaluate the guest and the host. And leaving the guest online kind of puts the other callers in a position of not wanting to say what they really think about the show. That's why we ask you respectfully, of course, to go ahead and leave the call.
Okay, see ya.
All right, see ya, man. What's that? Who's typing?
Jerry Crews last night around 2 in the morning. He was off the hook, man.
Dude, I finally shut it off, I don't know, maybe 11 o'clock. You know, regardless of the Obamacare portion of it, that dude is on the money.
He's
and he
completely on the money. And
I love
what,
the way
he Tory
and the
other
senators called him out for being phonies.
Dude,
said, you
when,
guys are taking symbolic votes. There are no symbolic votes if 100 of us were there. I was like, wow. He just basically insulted the entire conference, which senators don't do. And it's great. He goes, look, you have a 12% approval rating. It's because you guys don't do anything.
Right, he's like, where is everybody? You know, and everybody's probably just hanging out down with their lobbyists or their interns. And, you know, they are removed from our world. And he's like, you know, you're the boss. We're the employees. I thought it was just fantastic. I mean, they're not going to overturn Obamacare or defund it or not funded or whatever the deal is, but that guy is on the money, and he was elected to go do his best to get rid of Obamacare, and that's what he's over there doing. Loved it. Hey, what do you guys think about David Perry?
I mean, it's hard not to. He's like the greatest recruiter we've ever heard of,
isn't he?
He's ridiculous. I mean, the stories that he'll tell, he just, yeah, I called him 83 times. And he's not calling some IT guy. He's calling, like, the CEO of Duke Energy, you know?
You're yeah, like, and he really did. You know what I mean? See, a lot of Animal's guests, and I don't want to disparage anybody, but many of his guests are, like, flim-flam people, like where they've got maybe some software or there are some kind of a, you know, media, and I'm trying to be as broad as I can rather than pinpoint any.
Yeah, well, there's practitioners and there's thinkers and there's people who push things forward, but that's not the same as being able to call someone and close a deal.
He actually has done all that stuff, and he's like, yeah, I get on a plane and meet him. I don't care if they're, you know, in Germany. And the animal's like, what?
The Wall Street Journal telling a story about once he bought a hot dog cart in New York.
Yeah.
Because he knew there was the only way to get a hold of a guy. Another time he went on a ski slope and faked a leg injury. So the CEO would stop and talk to him.
Oh, my God.
I mean, he's ridiculous.
I didn't know about the fake leg injury. But
I mean, and he's dead serious, too. You know, he just asks. I mean, he puts a lot of work. I've talked to him a couple times, and he puts so much work into these searches because he charges full. You know, these are $250,000, $300,000 searches. So he says, talk to someone, I'm serious. But he didn't start off that way. It's just that's where he's gotten to.
I would love to be recruiting at that level, but he's heavy. I mean, he's a heavy duty dude. You know, when he was talking about how he goes to see every person that he recruits for, and I do that myself. But I'm only recruiting here around the Midwest. You know, last Friday I was in Detroit. He may have been in Stuttgart. You know what I mean?
Right.
But.
Right. Fly to Pittsburgh because I've never been to Pittsburgh.
But Animal freaks out like you don't really actually leave the city, do you? Animal never leaves his crib. So
I've seen him out
he
once.
Can't picture, he just can't picture it, you know, and I thought it was quite the contrast. I liked it. But yeah, great guy. Somebody wants to say something? Anybody? I've got to call a customer, and if my customer is listening, which is quite possible, this is an international show. Dear customer, okay, our guy was in there this morning. You told him that he's going to get the offer. If it's not 75, it's not happening, and I've done my best, and 73 is not going to fly, so I need to call you. I'm going to call you after the show, but that's what we got to talk about. Okay, back to the show. Give me a score on Jim.
I mean, I want to give Dave a ridiculous score, but I'm going to be fair and only give him an 88. Because, you know, there's no such thing as a 10.
Huh.
And I thought Animal did a better job. He actually called David out on stuff. It made him describe it. So I'm going to say I'm going to give Animal an 85. I felt like it was a good match for him actually pulling information out. Could have been better, but it was different. I don't think David normally gets interviews like that. And, you know, Animal didn't say, okay, you know so much about this, I'm going to let it go. He didn't let him get by with some platitudes.
Yeah.
Good for Animal.
I'll give my score. I think Dave gets a 92. I'm going to give Animal a 90 as well because it's a rare opportunity to hear a guy that seriously is going around the globe placing the level of people that he is and with stories to back up anything that he's suggesting you do. And Animal says, well, give me an example. He has an example. Examples that you couldn't shoot a hole through or examples that they didn't just make up right before the phone call today. The dude is the real deal. And I bet his average fee is 10 times my average fee. Respect. And I'm giving like a gang sign. Respect. Who else has a score? Anybody? Is it just you and I, Jim?
It could be.
Seriously?
No, I'm on the phone.
Oh, okay. Thanks. You're not on the phone.
I would have loved to have heard more of those stories. You know, some of that should be around too. That would have been really fun to hear.
I think it's because we know David for so long. I mean, we've known him for 7 years. So I think sometimes Animal forgets all the stories because we've already heard them.
Yeah, and I don't know them. I would have loved to have heard them. But regardless, he commanded respect over the phone. I thought he was very well spoken, down to earth. Did some things I wouldn't necessarily do, but maybe that's why he's succeeding so well. So I'd have to give him a 92 as well, and I think Animal a 92.
Wow. David Manister, gave the guest a 10, which is actually 100 in terms of how we recorded here. But best we've ever had. Though he didn't like the Tea Party after show party, so that was losing him. But David is a thinker, you know what I mean? Ted Cruz, if you don't like what Ted Cruz was saying, you don't like the way this whole thing is set up, frankly. And they are to do everything within their power to do what their constituents want them to do, period.
Well, they're supposed to act on their principles. I think what the big thing is, regardless of how it goes, I think people aren't prepared for what happens next week. I got the letter last week telling my insurance was canceled because when I moved to Texas, I didn't have the same plan. So I got to go on. I either have to skip insurance or go on the individual exchange in January. And when people realize how bad it is, they're going to be screaming bloody murder in St.
Louis. It's unbelievable how bad it is. I am working for a company where I am placing the people into these hospitals and healthcare institutes that are going to determine your future.
No way.
I am. And they're that's why I said on your page, Jerry, you would hate what I'm doing. And they're, you know, the supply chain people, they're they're going to cut everything down. They're going to base it on your age, your projected lifespan. The quality of care is going to be horrendous.
If you're good looking, does that help at all?
No.
They just announced in California and in St. Louis, BJC and St. Luke's won't be on the exchanges, and they're possibly not using Mercy. These are the three major hospitals that people use. So imagine that you were born, your son was born, your nieces and nephews are all born in the same hospital, which is next door to where you live, and no one else in your family can go there anymore because you have group insurance.
Oh, so you can't just go get So it's almost like an HMO where you have to be in your network to get your.
It is an HMO.
But it's worse than that, Jerry. I mean,
yes.
Let's say your wife needed a kidney, God forbid, and they literally go on analytics and numbers, and if she doesn't meet their criteria, guess what? She's not going to be in line for that kidney.
Now, this is only if you have to get your – if you're covered under the exchanges? Because if you've
no,
got your own care –
No, everything, because every hospital, every physician
–
everybody is going to have to be – is going to be scrutinized and scored, everybody.
Jim, why were you kicked off your insurance? What happened?
Because I'm a small business. I'm a small business. The plan that – when I moved to Texas, I got a new plan – it came into place after Obamacare, so it doesn't fit Obamacare. So they're canceling the plan, and they'll have new plans on the exchanges for me that I'll be capable of buying.
I see. So you started the new plan after Obamacare.
Yeah.
See, also, we're self-insured, too.
Barrier.
I had the plan before Obamacare, so I got a letter that said, hey, your plan is grandfathered in. However, if you change anything...
Right.
It will no longer be grandfathered in.
It's going to triple in cost.
Yeah, so as the premiums went up, every couple of months it'd go up $50.
Yeah.
So they kept going up and up. However, I had this letter that was more or less a threat to, you better not change a thing. I wasn't able to increase my deductibles or change my coverages in any way.
Yeah.
So finally, when it had gone from $400 to like $900 this last spring, I said, okay, got to get out of my old plan and look around for a new plan, knowing full well I'm no longer, I don't have this grandfathered in policy, but I wasn't going to continue paying another $5,000 a year just to have my grandfathered status. So I switched over to a new policy through Humana, and
But see, Jerry, these grandfathered policies aren't even going to really be grandfathered. That's what I'm trying to tell you. Everyone will be affected by this. Everyone.
Bad. And here's the thing. The average person doesn't know this, but they are starting to get bumped off, and the exchanges won't work. So this 24-hour, you know, getting up there and saying, 22 hours saying, look, this is not going to work, doesn't matter if they pass it or not, if Cornyn and all the rest decided to be cowards. What's going to happen is when the average person starts seeing what's happening, they're going to start screaming. I would not go to a Thanksgiving or Christmas dinner with any small businessman because I can guarantee you people will be thrown out of Christmas dinner when they realize that the hospital they've been going to for 40 years, that they can't keep their doctors.
Nope.
It's going to be insane. It'll be worse than anything you ever heard of.
Why again, though? Because the doctors quit? Or the doctors don't want any part of it, or what?
Doctors are actually going to be, Jerry... I'm placing the people that are going into the hospitals and cutting everything. The doctors are not going to be judged anymore on the quality of care or the quantity. It's going to be if they meet their metrics. And if you're in the hospital 1.2 days and Obamacare says you should only be in there 0.8 days, the doctor gets a huge ding. So you may not even get your same doctor.
Yeah, all the good doctors switch to cash or private medical that will be above and beyond. It'll be supplemental.
Yeah, you've got to pay cash for it if you want any health care now.
Pretty much that's it. The doctor you've been using is going to switch. And, by the way, you have to have an insurance policy, too, or they're going to charge you.
Then maybe what I ought to do real quick is go out and buy a few replacement hips and knees and stuff, get measured for the right size.
You go to Canada.
Down the road. Yeah.
Go marry a Canadian woman. Sure, it'll take longer, but...
Well, honestly, I was told that our health care system is going to be worse than it is in England, where the mortality rate is 25% when they're in the hospital. And ours is supposed to be worse now.
Well, we're set up differently. I don't think people recognize. The problem is it's too late. Now that all these people are off these exchanges, all the retirees and everybody else, they have to add new people. That's why they spent $600 million on advertisements. If they don't add people, these things fall under their own weight in 3 months. The high-risk pool that they brought up, the very first thing they did was kids to 25 in the high-risk pool, ran out of money in the first quarter. The first quarter of the first year, it ran out of money.
So how are they going to fine or penalize people that don't have the insurance? How's that go again?
It's the IRS. Well, it's charged onto your thing. So if you haven't filed your taxes or you file an extension, the first year you're going to get a subsidy for free and they're not going to check it.
Regardless of income?
Yep. The first year you just claim that you don't have any money, there's no way for them to check it, and they're not going to come after you. So massive fraud is going to be led to by that. The second year they'll be basing it based on your income statement. So you pay, and the subsidies come off your income tax credits later on. So it's money out the door, and then you get off your taxes. You have to increase your withholding or you're paying more out of pocket.
So my question is, what is the point of the insurance then in any way? If
not, well, to destroy the insurance companies. That's the point.
But see,
paper pushers.
I'm going to go ahead and theoretically cancel my family's insurance. Okay. I'm going to, at the end of the first year, I guess there's no cost. So right off the bat, I'm saving $7,000-$8,000 the first year.
No, you'll have. It's worse than that. You'll have to on your W-2s or W, whatever 1040s or whatever.
Right.
You'll have to show proof of your insurance on a separate form, and then you calculate a penalty based on the number of months that you did not have insurance.
Yeah.
And that'll be a tax you pay at the end of the year. It'll be added on to your taxes. So if you don't have insurance in 2014. In April 2015, you'll have at least $2,500, maybe more, depending on your income, that you'll have an additional tax problems. If you go all cash like that, the problem that you face is that you will, if you get cancer, you can always sign up. But if you are in a car wreck and you go to the hospital, now you're hit with other medical bills. So the question is, if you're, like, I pay $1,400 a month for a family of four. So I look at it like that's $17,000, $18,000 a year. If I put that in cash, will I spend more than $18,000 negotiating it with a physician? Over the course of 3 or 4 years, if I can go 3 years without a major accident, I've got a big cash thing and can pay for it, and I've saved. I'm paying $2,500 to the government for not having it, but I'm ahead because the insurance won't cover everything.
I don't mind paying out of pocket. I don't mind paying out of pocket for stuff, but when I finally get cancer or Alzheimer's or something.
Well, then you just sign up.
Then I'm going to sign up.
Yep. Well, then you're a bad person.
Well, I have a question for you because I know it from the business end, but from personal end, like my son who has a mental disability and he's going to be 25. What do I do for him? I mean, or
so
after 26,
he'll have to sign up. You'll have to use one of those. You can just go online and sign him up. He's eligible for all the subsidies that are in place. So he'll be able to sign up. The problem is it'll be hard for him to get good doctors.
That's what I was going to say. He's going to be discriminated against because he's disabled.
Very much so. Because there are not that many doctors that will take it. They'll be paid nothing to serve him. So when we first got our insurance in 2006, we signed up for Blue Cross Blue Shield because my wife's gynecologist took Blue Cross Blue Shield. We said, okay, well, we'll go to Blue Cross Blue Shield. And we bought a policy, and when we talked to her, because her aunt worked in the office, she said, you got to switch insurances. Because this only allows the doctor to talk to you for 7 minutes. It's based on the Medicaid insurance. You do not want this. It's worthless. So we went and upgraded our insurance so we could actually have real medical care. But it's only because we knew. We wouldn't have known if we didn't have someone working in the office that this was a problem. So we upgraded and paid quite a bit more, but then we got the care they were looking for, which is good because we had a premature child and everything was in place. So, but imagine how bad it would have been if we didn't know, if we didn't have that access. Well, most people don't. So it's a real cluster from there because no one knows what's going to happen. And it's what I'm saying. The average person doesn't know this is coming down the pike.
No, they
and
don't.
When they find out, they're going to be furious.
You know.
Furious. But then the Republicans don't. I mean, Ted Cruz, you remember Ted Cruz stood up, but all the rest of them, you know, McConnell, Cornyn, and all these other guys, you know, they're. And it's all about, you know, who do you want to help? they don't care about the middle class. They don't care about rich people. They figure there's just more money to be taken. But they don't want to be on it, you know.
I have a question. I was just signed up under my husband's federal. You know, he's a government employee.
You're taken care of.
You're all set.
Really, in terms of what?
Yeah.
Like we,
and you have a different. Now, is he in D.C.? Are you guys not in D.C.?
He's a federal judge, but he doesn't work out of D.C.
So you'll have to still use your state exchanges, but the chances are you'll have better exchanges than other people. There'll be specific plans for the federal ones. That was the whole point, is you get away from it. You're still
the
under.
The thing is, they make it seem as if this is only for
Kathy,
people
are you
that don't have insurance. Well, eventually everybody's going to be shoved off of their insurance.
Right.
Yeah, they're already yeah, they
into
already
this crap. And I see us heading that same way, even though this whole time I'm fully prepared and responsible to pay for my own insurance. But at some point it's going to be a single payer. Everybody, you're on this.
Well,
this is it.
That was the hope. They were hoping to get to single payer by ruining things and saying, look how bad it is. The insurance companies did it so they get the young folks. But long term, this is not going to – it's not going to work the way that they were hoping it would work. And
no one knew how it was going to work. No one even wanted to read through the 4,000 pages.
Oh, I read it when it was 1800. It was very clear that the only purpose in the thing was to kill the insurance companies.
But now it's 28,000 some pages of regulation
oh, yeah.
and how to implement it. You guys, this is giving me a headache, man. I got to call this company and
we
talk
gotta,
to them about it.
You
got to
go make
offer.
Some money, honestly. You don't have time to sit and talk about it.
It's crazy. Crazy.
Just
one of
remember,
my
any liberal family members have to use it though.
Yeah.
You don't pay for any surgeries, and you make sure they know. When they lose their insurance, you go, good. Good. You're going to get it good and hard.
You're going to get it. All right, everybody.
And whenever somebody voted for Obama and feels bad about it, or whoever senator, I mean, you're in Indiana, right? Are you in
yeah.
Ohio, Jerry?
Indiana.
Yeah. Well, you just remember Murdoch versus that joker that you have. Just remind them, say, this is what you screamed about. We stood in the streets and were beaten by union guys to stop this. So my conscience is clean, even if my health care sucks.
You know, but the union is getting a waiver to get out of it.
No, they're not getting out of it. There's no way to get them out.
I'm just too pissed.
They're screwed. They got screwed over.
I got to go.
This is all about finding the underclass. It's about finding people who don't have jobs and insurance and tricking the young as long as they can. But,
well, that's
you know,
my son, and that's what scares me. I don't know what to do.
Why do you two hate America?
Why do I hate America?
Why do you want people with pre-existing conditions to die?
I'm just aware that there's risk pools. That's why you have insurance. It doesn't do any good to ruin it for everybody, though.
Typical rich white guy stuff right there, Jim.
Giving money to Acorn and SEIU and insurance executives.
All right, you brought up Acorn. I gotta go. I can't take this. I have to get my head clear so I can talk to a customer in a second. Feel free to keep on talking all day, Kathy.
I'll
your input was
no,
fantastic.
I gotta go find a way to pay for insurance next year.
Yeah, man.
I do too. I've gotta go find these people that are gonna make all these cuts. That's my job right now.
All right, enjoy the day.
Good luck.
All right.
Good luck with that.
Bye.
Guys.
All right, so 18 years in the industry, starting with
what
the family
industry?
Firm, recruiting industry.
Oh, there you have it.
Started
Jerry,
with
wake
the family
up.
Firm.
You recommended this guy. Go ahead.
I mentioned it offhand when I was in a drunken stupor.
Don't ask Jerry for advice
Jerry
after
for
5 p.m. Okay, go
oh
ahead,
my
Ryan.
God.
You know, you guys. I have to say, no banning on this show. Nobody's that bad. And you know,
now, here's the deal.
The
dude is full of negative energy, and I'm just saying, I simply don't. The after show is not about negativity. It's not about
Jerry.
What?
If you open your eyes, you'd see he talks to you just like you talk to me. It's constantly, Animal is an idiot. Everything he says is nonsense. I used to like the show, but now it's nothing.
Yeah.
I don't kick you off.
Hey.
I don't kick you off the show, and
hey,
you're not
going to
kick him off, okay?
Hey, I just don't need it. If he is ready to say that he's done with it, then I embrace his participation.
So Amy Best is a good communicator.
Where does whiskey
does
fit in with
recharging?
She does,
and being does
that make
a
me an introvert?
Manager. That doesn't make her an extrovert.
Yes, Jerry.
She recharges by
Jerry, if you drink alone, then you're an introvert.
What if I drink alone, but I call a lot of people all night long because I want to talk to somebody?
Then you're an extrovert.
You're an extrovert.
While you're drinking,
okay.
Then you're an alcoholic, but that's okay.
I don't think that can be underestimated.
Well, Marco, let me
that is shocking. I'm just jumping in to say that is shocking. Okay, I'm
isn't
back
that
to
funny?
Listening.
Isn't that funny? When I start to talk, finally get a chance to start talking, the mouthpiece comes in. Go ahead, Jer. Take over.
Well, you know, it's like you're a puppet, and Jerry's it's Jerry's voice. You're the he's the ventriloquist.
Hey, I was just interjecting. I'm not taking over. I was just interjecting.